Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are undertaking a pretty critical mission, plumbing the depths of the incredible system that keeps, well, everything in your body running. We're doing a deep dive into hematology, that's the study of blood, and, you know, how all its parts are involved in health and disease.
Yeah, and our sources lay out this system beautifully. You know, the components, how they're made. But what really jumps out is how quickly it shifts to the clinical side, the really high-stakes emergencies when this incredibly delicate system goes wrong.
Exactly. So our goal today is to quickly unpack the basic architecture of blood, what it does, and then look at some major hematologic disorders. Things like sickle cell crisis, anemia, blood cancers, even those scary clotting problems. We want you to walk away feeling, well, pretty well informed. Okay, let's unpack this. So let's start right at the beginning. What is blood? The textbook answer is kind of surprising, isn't it? It's officially called a connective tissue.
Yeah, it seems weird, but that's the classification. And there's a lot of it. It's roughly 8% of your total body weight. So 5 or 6 liters in an average adult. Quite a bit.
And most of that isn't even the red stuff we picture.
Right. Over half, 55%, is plasma. That plasma is mostly water, like 92% water, but it's carrying all the important stuff, proteins, electrolytes, nutrients. The other 45%, that's the foreign elements, red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets.
And its job goes way beyond just carrying oxygen, which is what everyone thinks of first. That delivery service, oxygen and nutrients in, CO2 and waste out. But the sources really highlight blood as the body's whole regulatory infrastructure.
Absolutely. It's like the body's internal courier, carrying hormones everywhere. It's your thermostat, regulating temperature. It manages pH balance, fluids, electrolytes. Oh, and the whole immune system via those white blood cells.
Wow. So it's doing like 5 or 6 vital jobs at the same time it's delivering the goods. Okay, so let's look at those formed elements, the tiny workers, red blood cells, RBCs. They're triggered by erythropoietin, take about 5 days to mature.
And live for about 4 months. Their whole job is hauling oxygen using hemoglobin. Dedicated little guys.
And then the white blood cells, WBCs, the defenders. They're bigger than RBCs, right? And they handle immunity.
Yep. Through really complex strategies, humoral or cell-mediated responses, they're the soldiers fighting off infections. Essential.
And finally, the smallest ones, the platelets. Tiny but mighty, crucial for hemostasis.
Hemostasis, yeah, the technical term for stopping bleeding. They form that first plug. But the real magic is when they kick off the clotting cascade. It's this complex chain reaction that makes fibrin like a strong mesh to really seal the wound. Super sophisticated stuff.
Okay, so we know the parts. Now, where are they made? The hematopoietic system. Where's the factory?
The main factory floor, the primary site, is the bone marrow. That's where almost all blood cell production starts. But other organs are key support players. The liver, for instance, makes essential clotting factors like providing raw materials, and it filters the blood, removes toxins. Huge filtration job.
And the spleen. Can't forget the spleen.
Definitely not. The spleen is like quality control and recycling. It filters out and breaks down old or damaged RBCs. That's crucial for homeostasis, you know, keeping things stable. And it helps control infections too, a vital maintenance hub.
Understanding how widespread this system is, that's key, because it explains how problems show up. Like you said, hematologic disorders, they rarely present as just one clean symptom. The sources mention pneumonia in a sickle cell patient, or bad abdominal pain when the issue is just thick blood.
Exactly. Seems totally unrelated, but the blood connects everything. That's where the detective work comes in clinically. You have to think systemically.
So it's a big warning sign for assessment. We need to look for those systemic clues. Not just the obvious local thing. Changes in consciousness, vertigo, fainting, being incredibly tired, shortness of breath, dyspnea, or chest pain.
Mm-hmm. Even things like coughing up blood, weird visual problems, or muscle pain and stiffness that you just can't explain could all point back to a blood issue.
Okay, let's use that systemic idea to pivot to the disorders. We're moving from quality control issues to quantity issues to clotting chaos. Let's start with a quality problem, sickle cell crisis.
Right. Sickle cell is the most common inherited blood disorder. It's a gene defect that messes up adult hemoglobin. So instead of nice, round, flexible RBCs, you get these defective, stiff, oblong ones, sickle-shaped.
And those stiff cells get stuck in tiny blood vessels, causing a logjam.
Precisely. That blockage is the vaso-occlusive crisis that's the intense pain patients feel. But it's not the only problem. You can get acute chest syndrome, which is serious lung trouble, or a splenic sequestration crisis. The spleen suddenly traps blood, causing shock.
And there were two others related to production itself.
Yeah, the aplastic crisis where the bone marrow just stops making RBCs, like the factory shuts down, and the hemolytic crisis where there's massive sudden destruction of RBCs leading to things like jaundice. It's one disease, but it attacks in so many ways, all because of cell shape.
Wild. Okay, let's contrast that shape problem with quantity issues, too little or too much. First, too little. Anemia.
Anemia is basically low hemoglobin or low RBC count. Mm. Most common is iron deficiency anemia, often caused by chronic blood loss that might not even be obvious, slow GI bleeds, heavy periods, maybe even donating blood too often.
And the symptoms sound just draining.
They really are. Patients feel totally worn down, no energy, can't catch their breath because there isn't enough oxygen transport, and sometimes even chest pain, like angina, because the heart's working overtime trying to compensate.
Now let's swing completely the other way. Polycythemia. Too many red blood cells. Too much of a good thing turning bad.
Yeah, this is a huge clotting risk. The blood gets thick, viscous, increases volume too. Think of it like sludge instead of wine. This thick blood can cause strokes, TIAs, pulmonary embolisms, heart attacks. It's serious. It can be from a rare disorder, another disease, or even just living at high altitude for a long time. The body overcompensates.
All right, moving to the cancers of the blood system. Problems where the factory is making the wrong stuff. First, leukemia, cancer of the lymphoid system.
Right. Leukemia means increased production of immature or abnormal blood cells. And the key thing is the consequence. These bad cells crowd out the normal, healthy cells in the bone marrow.
So if the abnormal cells take over the space, what happens?
You get systemic failure, anemia, because not enough healthy RBCs are made, thrombocytopenia, not enough platelets, so you bleed easily, and leukocytosis. Lots of white blood cells overall, but they're abnormal and don't work right.
Right.
There are acute types, very fast, and chronic types that build up slower.
And then there are lymphomas, malignant diseases in the lymphoid system itself. Non-Hodgkin and Hodgkin. Hodgkin is interesting because the symptoms can be sneaky.
That's right. Symptoms might not show up for years, but when they do, it's often general stuff. Night sweats, chills, a cough that won't quit, swollen lymph nodes, losing weight without trying, itching, even bone pain. It just underscores again that blood diseases affect the whole person, never just local.
Okay, finally, let's touch on the clotting system failures. When hemostasis goes totally wrong, hemophilia is the classic example of not enough clotting.
Yeah, usually low levels of factor VIII, that's type A, or factor IX, type B. They just can't form clots effectively. Biggest constant risk, spontaneous bleeding inside the skull. Even a minor bump can be life-threatening because the bleeding won't stop internally.
But then there's the flip side, maybe even more complex, disseminated intravascular coagulation, DIC. You called it a terrifying two-stage emergency.
It really is. DIC is like the body's entire clotting system goes absolutely haywire and then immediately goes bankrupt. Stage one, massive, inappropriate clotting everywhere. Free thrombin, fibrin deposits. The body uses up all its clotting factors, making tiny clots where they shouldn't be.
And because it used up all the supplies, all the clotting factors, what's next?
Stage two. Uncontrollable bleeding. The body has nothing left to stop actual bleeding when it happens. This double whammy of clotting and bleeding makes DIC incredibly dangerous. Very high mortality risk.
Okay, this is where it gets really critical. If you encounter a patient having a crisis from one of these disorders, what's the immediate game plan?
For almost all of them, sickle cell pain crisis, severe anemia, bleeding from hemophilia or DIC, it boils down to supportive care. Hit the systemic issues hard. That means oxygen right away, IV fluids to keep circulation going, strong pain meds, put them on an ECG monitor, and just try to manage their comfort and anxiety. It's intense.
Let's zoom in on the highest stakes example from the sources. Transfusion reactions. This is an emergency caused by our treatment.
Right. It happens when incompatible blood is given. Think of it like a sudden, massive allergic reaction, anaphylaxis, essentially. The body attacks the transfused blood, leading to rapid circulatory collapse. The source is stress. You have to watch patients super closely, especially the first 30 to 60 minutes.
And assessing it can be tough, right? Especially if the patient is already really sick or can't respond well. What are the subtle signs?
Look for sudden chills, maybe unexplained back pain, heart rate jumping up, tachycardia, and blood pressure dropping, hypotension. The absolute number one most critical step.
Yeah.
Stop the transfusion immediately. Don't hesitate. Every second matters.
Absolutely crucial. Stop the flow. Call medical control. Then you have to swap out the IV tubing in the bag right away, get rid of it. And don't forget this, keep the blood bag and the old tubing. Send it with the patient to the hospital. They need it for testing.
So if we try to pull this all together, recap this huge system, the big theme across all these disorders is balance, isn't it? Right. You've got anemia, which is too little, polycythemia, too much or too thick, and then DIC and hemophilia, total failures in the complex balance of clotting.
Yeah. So what's the takeaway? This simple thing we call blood is actually this incredibly dynamic life-sustaining infrastructure. It's a factory, a delivery network, a defense force, all in one. And like we've seen, tiny defects in just one part can cause these complex, confusing, sometimes lethal problems everywhere in the body. Understanding that connection is just vital.
And maybe a final thought to leave you with. The sources mentioned that even with chronic leukemia, treatments like chemo and radiation often lead to remission. Think about that. The hematopoietic system is so complex, yet it can somehow hit a reset button after being overwhelmed by cancer and treatment and start making healthy cells again. What incredible regenerative power does the bone marrow have that allows it to bounce back like that day after day, making liters of this stuff? It's pretty amazing.